This is the Planta On The Line program at thecommentary.ca. I am Ann Jan Chocolater, sitting in for Joseph Planta. He is the hockey insider. For more than 30 years, Bob McKenzie has been one of the most prominent faces, voices, and authors in the Canadian sports media industry. Whether it is his appearances on the Sports Network, numerous sports radio shows, work on the hockey news, or blogs, Mr. McKenzie's volume of work has him considered one of the most influential figures in the National Hockey League. He has recently authored his first book, titled Hockey Dad, True Confessions of a Crazy Hockey Parent, which chronicles the trials and tribulations, ups and downs of his two sons as they progress through the Ontario minor hockey system. This deeply personal book also self-examines, sometimes in a critical light, the author's own involvement in his son's minor hockey years. Hockey Dad is published by Wiley. Please welcome to the Planta On The Line program, Bob McKenzie. Good day, Mr. McKenzie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Welcome to Vancouver.
Thank you.
As the introduction suggests, you have for a long time lived life in the fishbowl, perhaps not to the extent the people you cover do. I'm wondering if you have you had any hesitation in exposing some pretty big chunks of your family members' lives in this book?
Well, the first thing I did was I talked to my sons, Mike and Sean. Mike's 23, Sean's 20, and I asked them, I said, you know, I've always wanted to do this, but I won't do it unless you guys are 100% on board with it. And they were good with it. And it's interesting because my son Mike, who's 23, plays college hockey in the United States at St. Lawrence University on a hockey scholarship. And I understood why he wouldn't mind having his story told, because he's been successful and has done well with it. My younger son, Sean, he's 20 years old. He's in his second year of broadcast journalism at Fanshawe College in London, Ontario. And I thought he might have more of a hesitation because he had some concussion issues that forced him to not be able to play contact sports and competitive sports at the age of 14. And so it was a real tough time for him, because some of the best years of his life, when he could have been playing with all his buddies on his teams, he wasn't able to. But he, at the end of the day, I still think he was real positive about it. And I just made sure that both my boys and my wife read every chapter and were on side with everything that I was putting out there. And I don't mind putting myself out there, but I wanted to make sure that they were portrayed in an accurate light. And you've got to be careful when you're telling little snapshot stories for everybody's amusement and entertainment, that you don't create the wrong impression of what your kids are like. And my kids have turned out to be real good young men.
Yeah, and I guess your oldest son would be considered somewhat of a success story in hockey. I should say that they're both fine young men, so they're success stories overall, at least according to their dad. But Mike made it to, as you said, St. Lawrence University, and I guess this is his final year, so he has a scholarship. Now, your other son, Sean, I guess would be kind of a Shakespeare in tragedy, someone whose hockey career seemed to be doomed from a series of concussions he suffered from as a youngster, and he seemed to be playing his best hockey right when he suffered the final one.
Yeah, and I think that was the hard part for him. He knew he had just bad luck, and most of the concussions that he had weren't even in organized sports. He was 4 years old. He got pulled off monkey bars by his friend and hit his head, knocked out and knocked unconscious, getting chased around the pool by his brother, fell, tripped, banged his head off the side of the pool, knocked unconscious, rollerblading home from school, went to cut a corner, hit a patch of grass, did a face plant, knocked himself unconscious. Just a clumsy kid who just had some bad luck. And the last concussion he had was 14. That one came in a fight, if you can believe that, in AAA minor bantam hockey. And as it turned out, the concussion really wasn't that serious, but it did trigger a condition that's called chronic daily headache syndrome, and he's basically had a consistent headache for almost 6 years now. Now, it's not as severe as it was in the early going, but it's had a major impact on his life, and obviously not for the good. And for him, the most painful part of it wasn't the headaches that he has, but just losing his identity as a guy who played on hockey and lacrosse teams year-round, and you lose your identity with your peer group a little bit, and it's a bit of a challenge. So I think there's some bitterness on his part, but he's worked through that, and he understands that it would have been medically very risky to have him continue to play, because these headaches are a message that things aren't quite right there.
How far do you think Sean would have progressed had he been healthy?
Hard to say. I think he could have played, he would have played junior A hockey for sure, and he might have had an opportunity to play a Division III college hockey game in the States or Canadian university hockey. But it wasn't meant to be. And the message I send to him or anybody is that, you know, it's very unfortunate what happened. But it's well short of what anybody would deem to be tragedy or tragic, because there are so many bad things that can happen to your kids in life. And, you know, it's not great that he had his hockey career cut short. But the hospital wards are filled with kids who have it a lot worse than that. So it's, everybody's got issues they have to deal with. And I hope too that, you know, having the book long after I'm gone, I hope he's able to read it and realize that, and realize that you just got to keep a positive attitude about things.
It seems to me this issue of concussions is only going to get worse in all contact sports, because as generations pass, we're getting bigger and stronger from the neck down, but there doesn't seem to be anything we can do to make ourselves physically stronger from the neck up.
No, that's right, and it's really very difficult to guard against it, and the game's getting faster. People are skating faster, and as you point out, they're getting bigger and stronger, so when there are collisions. The funny thing is helmets are more to prevent traumatic injuries like a fractured skull than they are to prevent concussions. And, you know, if you're traveling at a high rate of speed, whether it's in a car, on a bicycle, on the ice, even running, if you get stopped so suddenly that your brain inside your skull smashes up against the skull, you're doing damage to it, and you're getting a bruised brain, which is the very definition of what a concussion is, to varying degrees. And you're right, it's become much more prevalent, and our awareness of them has become more. And so it's very important to be able to identify when a player is being concussed. And I hope that's one of the byproducts of the book too, is that it might shed a little more light on this whole issue of concussions in minor hockey, and make parents realize that you can't play through a concussion. You've got to shut it down, even if that's hard to do, and allow the brain to heal properly.
When you were covering the NHL entry drafts over the years, how often would you look up at the stands with those fresh-faced teenagers and those awkward-looking suits embracing their parents as they're drafted, and dream that one day you'd be there up there doing the same?
You know what? It's funny. Maybe because I've been around the game for as long as I have, I never really sort of held that up as a monument for something to strive for. For me, the reward, I'm a big journey versus a destination guy. I've tried to impart this to my kids too, that the reason you play minor hockey isn't so that you can be as good at it as you possibly can and get to play the professional game or what have you. The reason you play minor hockey is to have fun. The reason you play minor hockey is to learn a lot of values like hard work, teamwork, discipline, respect, all those things, how to control your emotions, how to fit in with others, how to deal with adversity under pressure, things like that. The hockey part of it, I don't want to say it's incidental, because it's not, but at the end of the day, for me, it was more about teaching the kids the right values, for them to have some fun, and to belong to a peer group. My son's friends, all their best friends are kids they grew up playing sports with. All my wife and I, our friends, are parents of kids that our kids played with, that's the payoff for me, is how your kids develop as human beings, and how you end up with a social set of friends and acquaintances that are part and parcel of the whole minor hockey package.
Given your experience with the minor hockey system in Canada, both from the inside, because you did some coaching, and the outside, if you can make one change, what would it be?
Oh, boy. You know what? I really think they've done a great job. Since I stopped coaching, like I coached in the late 90s and in the early part of the new millennium, and even since then, they've made some amazing advances in terms of when the NHL got rid of the clutch-and-grab game and went to more free-flowing and speed and skill, minor hockey did as well. They took out the red line, and I think that's had a marvelous impact on the game, and that it's much improved from in the last 10 years. Huge strides. If I was going to change anything, I'd probably try and deorganize the younger ages a little bit, the 6 and 7 year old house league, and not go to. I think we spend too much time trying to line the kids up for face offs and I know that there's some 3-on-3 hockey leagues in the summer, and I'd like to see them go to even like a 4-on-4 for the full house league season for 7 and 8 year olds, spend less time doing the whole face-off thing and more time doing what they do in the 3-on-3 summer hockey, which is as soon as the goal is scored, the puck's live, and the team that got scored on breaks it up the ice. No face-offs, no whistles, no penalties, just penalty shots instead of penalties. And as I say, just get more and more kids involved in skating and reacting and playing, as opposed to, you know, I can't even, there's a chapter in the book that talks about how much time is wasted every time a kid in minor hockey scores a goal. The referees, the team kids themselves, aimlessly skate over to the bench, record it for the timekeeper. Who cares who got the goal? Drop the puck and let the kids skate. Ice time's expensive. So if there's anything that that I would probably change about that, it would be just to deorganize a little bit on the entry level and just try to speed things up. And we can worry about the rules and teaching them how to line up for face-offs and offside and all that kind of stuff later.
The whole business of hockey, whether it's scouts, agents, college scholarships, the Bantam draft, the NHL draft, seems to be creeping up to younger and younger ages all the time. Is this having a negative impact on minor hockey?
Yeah, it can, absolutely. In Ontario, the draft age is 1 year older than it is in the Western League. And that, and you can see it, and there's an entire book of the chapter, sorry, an entire chapter of the book is devoted to that whole issue of scouts and the draft year. And boy, oh boy, people's values can go right out the window when they suddenly the draft is the thing. And for a lot of minor hockey teams and a lot of kids and parents, they all of a sudden stop being good parents and good teammates because there's this prize that's potentially out there. And they think the way to get that prize is by being self-absorbed and putting your kid on a pedestal and making him better than everybody else. And if they only realize that the scouts are going to the rink to look for the kids that work the hardest, that share the puck the best, or they're the best teammates, and that, everybody would be a lot further ahead. And the coaches and the minor hockey system is guilty, too, because they play into the whole thing. I don't know how many times I've heard coaches of a minor hockey team in a player's draft year say, okay, boys, there's lots of scouts in the stands tonight. Let's put on a show for them. Let's go. You want to show the scouts what you can do? That's precisely the wrong reason to play hockey. Hockey's a team game. You play it for your team. You play it for yourself and the guys next to you on the bench and on the ice. If you're playing it for the scouts, you're playing it for all the wrong reasons, and the scouts are going to be quick to pick up on that. So, you know, just stay focused on the true values of the game, which is it's a team game, and play it that way.
You mentioned in the book that there was a point in your life when you questioned the whole hockey dad role that you were playing and asked yourself in the rink one night, what am I doing here? Was this more of a case of temporary burnout, or was there some serious disillusionment there?
I wouldn't call it disillusionment. It was probably, you know, it was a little bit of burnout, a little bit of my kid was going through sort of a rough patch and wasn't playing particularly well. His team wasn't doing particularly well. And things were, my son was an excellent student until he got to grade 9, and he had problems with math. And without getting into all the details, because it's more a socioeconomic, political discussion, but there was a whole new curriculum in Ontario high schools at the time, and the teachers were basically at war with the government. And there was a work to rule campaign going on at school, and a lot of kids weren't doing well, and they introduced a new curriculum that was really stringent and difficult, and kids were flunking out, and it was a real nasty scene. In the high schools at the time, and my son was kind of caught in the middle of that, and that, so he was really struggling with school, and he never had any problems with it in the past, and the hockey, and I was sitting in a rink one night, and I'm looking around, and this team's getting beat about 12-0, and he's playing terrible, and he's got like a 43% in math, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, what the heck am I doing here? This is nuts. So that led to a decision to actually put him in a private school as opposed to the school that he was in, and maybe to back off on the AAA hockey a little bit and get a little more balance in his life, let him play some other sports, football, cross country, volleyball, all that kind of stuff. And we had the best of intentions, and he did put a much heavier emphasis on education after that, but he surprised everybody the next year by playing well enough to get drafted into the OHL, and that was that. So it's funny how your perspective changes a little.
Yeah, I guess. I was chatting with a friend of mine, a hockey dad whose boy is 6, I think. He has some talent and some passion for the game. But he was lamenting the fact that, and this is not a new phenomenon, that there are so few male elementary school teachers. Aside from the issue of disciplining young boys, there's no adult figure in school to talk about the big game on TV last night, or the child's dreams of playing professional hockey, or his own background and experience in playing the game, which he can pass down to his students. And he says this puts more pressure on hockey dads like him. Would you agree?
I don't know. You know what? I would almost say it's probably just as well, because as hockey dads, we're all sort of all-encompassing, and we get a little too wrapped up in the game, and I'm the first to admit it, and that's fine, and that isn't going to change. It's Canada, and we're hockey dads, and that's what we do. But, you know, maybe that's exactly what we don't need, is somebody else in school starting to divert the focus in hockey, that, you know, maybe it should be... It should be, you know, more focused on school and all that kind of stuff. And I'm sure the dads can as your friend does, you know, pass down the lore and tradition of the game to the son but to just try and get him focused on school when he's at school, as opposed to thinking about hockey all the time.
There's another independent cross-cutting issue to mention, and that's immigration and multiculturalism. This is a country of immigrants and recent immigrants like no other in the world, and we've had this policy of encouraging immigrants to preserve their culture and not necessarily embrace the values of their new country quite as tightly as other host country insists. The vast majority of these immigrants come from countries where hockey isn't played at any level, so I'm wondering how many thousands of Canadian boys, past and present, are there that have a passion for hockey at a young age but don't have adult figures in school or at home to encourage them to pursue their passion ever, or I guess I would fall into this category, or until it's too late to fulfill their potential.
Yeah, absolutely. It's there's no question about that. And it's also a very expensive sport to play. And unfortunately, regardless of the cultural heritage of people, there's an economic bias, and that is, if you don't have a lot of money, it's a tough game to play. And that's really unfortunate, because you'd like to think anybody who wants to play it could. You know, economically find a way to get it done, but that's not always the case. Ice time's expensive, sticks and equipment are expensive, and that. So, but you're absolutely right, and you know, we are seeing, we do see examples. You know, Nazem Kadri is of Lebanese descent. He was a first-round pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs and plays for the London Knights, and you know, that's the classic, you know, immigration story, that where the player was given an opportunity to play hockey, even though his father never really knew anything about the game and was probably too busy working and supporting his family when he came to Canada from Lebanon to fully embrace it. But he made sure to get his kid enrolled in hockey, and you're right, a lot of the families simply don't do that and don't get that, and I think that's one of the reasons why, certainly in some of the more urban areas of Canada, you're seeing some of the enrollment falling way, way off, because especially in Toronto, where multiculturalism is such a huge thing, and that's understandable too. So it's absolutely, I think you've hit the nail right on the head.
Yeah, I think the classic case is Ed Jovanovski, who didn't start playing hockey until a very late age of 13, wound up being the first player picked in, I think it was 96, because his Croatian Canadian dad didn't want him to play soccer, right?
Yep, absolutely remarkable when you think about it. Yeah. To start playing at 13 and end up as the first overall pick in the National Hockey League, it's amazing.
Now, Canada and the U.S. are the only countries in the world that have this one-size-fits-all approach to teenage athletes. We prevent pro teams from drafting them until they're 18 or older, let them compete against their peers until that age, no matter how good they may be. In every other country in the world, athletes are being signed as early as 11 years old, and if they're good enough to play against adults at an early age, they play, and if not, they at least can practice against adult pros and get coaching at the highest level. In Sweden, if you're good enough at 16 to play in the Swedish Elite League, that's where you'll be playing, and if not, you'll at least be in a professional environment. When it comes to player development, are we right and everyone else in the world wrong?
I really don't know enough about the other systems to know, but I do know this. I think the longer you can protect your kid and have him play against his peers, for the most part, and there's obviously exceptions to the rule. If you're just too darn good and that, you've got to move up and move on. But for the most part, you know, my attitude as a hockey dad was to try and keep my kid at home for as long as was humanly possible within reason, and not to be in a hurry to push him out the door and send him off to live with somebody else or to go and embrace a lifestyle where hockey's the only thing in his life. So, you know, I don't have a problem with the way it is, and in fact, I think a lot of people still think it's, as you point out, the North American system is probably later than anywhere else, and I think a lot of us still think it's too early sometimes. But it, you know, for a kid to get through the system and at that level and at the highest end of it, there's a lot of pressures involved, and you just hope they've got the good support system in place to be able to withstand all the pressure.
Getting back to hockey, Dad, I and a couple of others I mentioned it to were surprised to learn that this is your first book. We just assumed you had written books before, but had you thought about writing a book previously, and if so, on any particular topics you care to mention?
No, you know what, I've always had publishers want me to do books and NHL-themed books, you know, this or that, and quite frankly, I knew this was the first book and maybe the only book I'd ever write. Writing a book is an unbelievably labor-intensive project, and with my job the way it is, and trying to still run around and watch my kid play hockey, and that, it's awfully time-consuming. So I knew this was the one. I had the book kind of written in my mind for years. It was really quite easy to throw it down on paper, but and if you're going to do that much work, you want it to be something that you feel good about, and this is a real labor of love for me.
Well, former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin, who was the 2008 Republican U.S. vice presidential candidate, popularized the term hockey mom in that country last year. And let's hope your book popularizes the term hockey dad, which might very well happen, because this is a terrific read and certainly not your typical sports book by any means. Continued success to you and those three very important members of your family who we got to meet in this book, and thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, appreciate it, Anjan. Thanks a lot.
This has been the Plant on the Line show for thecomplete.ca. I am Anjan Chocolater.